This is Corey Lanzelli, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Podcast is kind of like a—it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here with the Rock Paper Podcast, episode 68. I want to remind everybody we got a birthday party coming up, or 1 year of the show, at Steve's Hot Dogs, June 7th, 11 to 5. And we've got Sky Burnt White, Apollo's Daughter, Zach Michael, Dimmer Wade Trent, Steve Ewing Duo, all guests of the show that are going to be playing there. And $15 hot dog buffet and full menu, and there's cold drinks at the TikTok Tavern next door, so come hungry and thirsty. But anyway, come this episode, 68, we are sitting here with Cortland. I messed up the first name thinking about trying to mess up the last. Cortland Zelli and my main man Jimmy.
What it is?
Sorry.
Yeah, I forgot. I can't really do that. No adjusting the boot while recording.
Yeah, this is giant.
Yeah, boot adjustments. You know, standard stuff.
Well, anyway, welcome to the show, guys. Jimmy, welcome back. Jimmy sat in a couple episodes back with Matthias, so that was his first taste, and now he's thirsty for more.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So Cortland plays guitar in Exit 714. There you go. That's it. That's all you get.
Some diddly wouts and some wout diddlies.
So if you haven't checked out Exit 714, go out and do that after this episode.
Well, of course.
Yeah. when did you pick up guitar, man? How was that all started?
I mean, probably about 12 or so. My parents were big musically. My dad played piano. My mom was a vocal teacher. They used to play out all the time. You know, bars, weddings, things like that. And
yeah.
My dad was a piano teacher for a long time. So, I mean, I kind of grew up around music my whole life. So, my uncle plays guitar, and one day he just brought me an acoustic guitar, and I just put it in the closet and never really messed with it.
Yeah.
And then, it's a great gift. I'm just going to put that
in. Yeah, I was like, I don't know. I was like skateboarding at the time. You know, I wasn't really into it, whatever. And then picked it up one day and just kind of couldn't set it back down. You know, I mean, just kind of got completely obsessed with it and mm-hmm. met a couple buddies and middle school that played, and we sit around a jam all the time, and I don't know, I just, you know, just loved it so much. It's what I would do all day, every day. I just get home from school or skip school or whatever, you know, come home and just play guitar all day and all night. And
was one of those guys Will Struberg?
That was after. That was a little after, yeah. It was like Joe Grant Coffey was one of them, and Rudy Amos. I still talk to him, not Grant too much, but Rudy's a drummer and everything, and we always jam together. And
yeah, Will, talked to him on, you know, several occasions. He's a good friend, and been on the show with him and Lance.
Mm-hmm.
But he credits you to a lot of his guitar playing. That he said that you taught him how to play guitar and things. And
yeah, that was we used to play a lot. He came over. That was when I had my first apartment. Probably was like 18 or so, something like that. Then we used to jam a lot over there, and he got a Taylor or something. He was just starting-ish kind of thing, so right. Then I'd show him some stuff, and we'd jam, you know. But I've seen him since, and he's gotten a lot better. He definitely has. He plays out a lot, and him and Lance, and
yeah.
Harmonicas, and all kinds of crazy stuff, yeah. Lap guitars, and it's pretty yep. cool. Yeah, he's come a long way.
So do you, you mentioned off mic that you moved around a lot for a while, but did mm-hmm. you always lived in the St. Louis area, or are you,
Mostly, yeah. I lived in Illinois for a couple of years, like out in the Grafton area, with my brother. Stayed out there for a while, and then moved back here to St. Charles. Pretty much St. Charles, O'Fallon, and St. Louis.
Yeah,
you know, mostly. Just moved around a lot. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of different places, a lot of different years, just sporadically.
Yeah, right.
been around, you know.
That's one thing, like, I wish I would have done a little more still. I mean, like, just traveling a little more. Because I live now, like, a mile or two from the house I grew up in.
Yeah.
I've never ventured off too far from home, but I like it out here. I like...
Oh, yeah.
So...
Yeah, it's nice to, you know, I've been here for, I guess, almost 3 years now, and this is probably the longest I've been in one spot for, in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not hating it.
You know? Right.
You know, it's like, I lived in Michigan for a year, and I mean, I've lived in O'Fallon, St. Charles pretty much my whole life, and then moving to Michigan, it's like, you want to come back, like, quickly. It's like, all your friends are there, and... You know, it's you make friends, but it's still not, like, home.
Sure.
So it's like you can travel all around, but it's like when you finally set roots somewhere, it's like that's where I'd rather be.
I've had a lot of, like, thinking about stuff like trying to maybe move to, like, something like Austin or Nashville, a bigger music town, like, where just... But I don't know, I can have a lot more opportunities to try to get into the music business some sort.
Yeah.
And I think about that, like, moving away from family and friends and trying to start something new, but I don't know, I also kind of like the, just to be able to try to do it out of, I feel like with, you know, internet these days, you can pretty much do it anywhere, so hopefully I can build something here in St. Louis with this show and all the other opportunities I've been able to get. But anyway, yeah. So when did you, you started playing guitar young and then you, from your parents, but, when did you get into the actually like songwriting and things?
I kind of started early. I played guitar for a while and wasn't able to sing and play, you know, for a long time, probably like 4 years till I was comfortable with like my guitar playing, you know, to where I thought I was good enough, you know what I mean? Like ish, but not what I wanted, and then I'd always try to sing and play, and it was just complicated. It was like being ambidextrous, you know, trying to do your hands and then sing at the same time and process all the thoughts, and you know, it was pretty overwhelmingly ridiculous. And then one day it just kind of like clicked. It was the weirdest thing. It just, you know, just started happening. It was, you know, I just practiced and it started happening. So then I would try to like write, you know, basic little songs, like funny little goof around songs and stuff with my buddies and everything, and you know, get all party and just write stupid stuff, you know. But had a little Tascam like 8-track recorder, and we just hit record and hang a microphone and just jam and record it all, you know. And then a little bit later I got together with my buddy Pete Deshawn, Joe Bazzelli, and who's our bass player at the time, Kyle Krangle, actually. And we got a little band together that, you know, we formed, and I would write the songs and we'd all jam them and stuff, and we played out a lot. I mean, it was called Good Question was the name of the band, and we did a lot of battles and, you know, everything like that, and shows, and I mean, we played like 15 battles, you know. It was awesome, it was fun. But that's pretty much where it started. I mean, I did that, I probably wrote like 12 songs in that band, and we would just play them all the time, and it was really fun. I mean, we were young, we were like freaking 16 or something.
Yeah,
but we played a lot.
I remember was at like a party, probably 8th grade or something, something like that. I remember going to a buddy's house and like he had an acoustic guitar, and I, by no means am I a musician. I've never I mean, I imagine if I applied myself I might be able to play. I just never had like the interest. Nothing's been in me to like coming out the way, you know, saying that if I need to pick up a guitar and play this, it's just never been there. But anyway, he had a guitar laying there and I picked it up, and it was similar, reminded me of that, because I was walking around the party and I was like just strumming, and I was just like writing, you know, making up rhymes about what was going on.
We got some dogs in the room.
We got an attack of the pups.
Got some company.
We got some dogs.
But yeah, so I used to walk around. I just walked around the party like strumming this guitar, which I don't know, who knows if it's even in tune or anything. But I'm like just writing silly shit about people bouncing on the trampoline and drinking Capri Suns or whatever we were doing.
Capri Suns.
I've tried to play guitar many times, and I've come to the fact that I've got sausage fingers that are not meant to play actual guitar. I'm only supposed to play bass, so I've tried and tried. So my wife bought me an acoustic for Christmas. It's like, all right, now I got to try and figure out how to do this, and it's like, you know, like a retard eating chicken wings. It's just not really working out for me.
Yeah, it takes some doing, you know. You got to be pretty persistent because, like I said, you know, I tried to sing and play for almost 5 years before I could finally, like, do it, you know. It was weird. Yeah.
You ever, I've talked about him on the show, and he's been on the show, so I like to talk about him even more, but he, Lincoln Durham, you ever check in his stuff out?
I have. I've watched some of his videos.
Yeah, man, he's, that guy's a freak, man. I don't know how he does it, but he plays drums with his feet and plays guitar and sings, yeah, and plays harmonica, crazy. And it's just like, I can't, you know, like you said, you're talking about playing just guitar and singing, and he's doing six other things, and it's like, I don't know how your brain can handle that without exploding.
Yeah.
I can barely walk and think at the same time, or chew gum at the same time without killing myself, so.
I'm amazed by just people that have any of the talent, so since I don't have any of the musical abilities, but anyway, yeah, man. Speaking of your guitar playing, you wanna throw one on here? You wanna play?
I can throw one on there. I can do a song called Spastic that I wrote. You can start with that guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to give her a whirl here.
Oh,
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was spastic. Look at that.
Woo!
Hoo!
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was good. So where'd that one come out of? Where'd you go?
A lot of stuff, you know. Usually, like, I write songs a lot when I'm either, like, pissed off or, you know, like, you know, just not in a good mood.
Sure, that's rock
music. I'm not
music
big,
right
like,
there.
Being all happy and jolly and, like, sitting down and writing a song about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, a lot of that's just situational, you know, certain situations you're in. If it's has to do with friends, people, chicks, or just life in general, or where you think you're at, where you want to be, and, you know, shit like that. And just kind of like asking yourself questions and trying to figure them out in your head, I guess, kind of thing.
You like Aaron Lewis?
Yeah.
I saw him acoustic, or he did full band stuff, but he also did like a middle part of the show. He just did solo acoustic stuff. And it was at the Pageant, and it was more like with his a lot of his newer material. But he also did a couple of Stain songs, mm-hmm. and he did a cover of "Turn the Page" from Seeger, which I recorded a video of it, and it sounded really good because it was just, you know, him solo acoustic in the Pageant, and I put it up on YouTube, and kind of a crazy thing. I'm scrolling through Facebook one day and I saw Bob Seger kind of like a shout out on his Facebook page saying, "Hey there, Aaron Lewis, thanks for doing this song."
Really? That's pretty cool.
And I clicked the link and it's my video, and I was like, holy shit, like Bob Seger sharing my video and
stuff.
That's
awesome.
It's like, man, it's Seger. Yeah. That's crazy. I was there.
But
I was there. I saw it.
The reason I was thinking of all that is because one of my favorite quotes, Aaron, so his new album, or his latest stuff, is more a little more country, kind of.
A little more.
Yeah.
Gee, that's a lot
and,
more country.
He says, he's introducing a song, and he's like, I fucked up, and I wrote a happy song. So weird, like, because all, you know, those Stain songs that he wrote were so
good. Some of them are pretty deep.
He writes a lot of really dark stuff, and very depressed
mm-hmm.
for a long time. I remember speaking of Aaron Lewis quotes, I saw him at the Point Fest one time, and before they even said anything to the crowd, the first thing he says, he goes, "Oh, we're gonna keep this as short and painless as possible." And I'm just like, man, this guy is so broke down and sad and like
he is. He's even in when he was Stained, you know.
Yeah.
It was the same thing. All the songs were just pretty deep and dark.
Right.
Well, it's so funny because everybody thinks that once you make it to that level, oh, life's just grand again.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have any issues, you don't have any problems, but it's like, that's when most of them get really bad.
Sure.
Like, I mean, look at Layne Staley. Like, that's when he wrote some of the greatest albums, when he was fucked up on heroin, and it's like, that's what eventually took his life. But
it's like, Kurt Cobain hated it too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, everyone, man, creates so much, but takes away so much too. Like, it was a... But I don't know. Some of those guys just can't handle it being in the spotlight like that.
It's gotta be tough.
Yeah.
Well, it's like everything you say, everything you do is judged by. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even back then it was bad. Can you imagine how it would be now? With everybody's a writer, everybody's a journalist, everybody's a photographer. You sneeze wrong on somebody, and it's like, oh, lady, you're spreading Ebola. Did you see it? I saw it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think for now, like, you know, we hardly have those rock stars anymore. You know, we got like Taylor Swift. Like, you know, she's as big as like. But other than that, like, you
when
know,
you watch the Grammys. It's it's depressingly ridiculous. You just got to turn it off. You know.
But I mean, you know, you think of like that '90s scene. Like, Nirvana was as big as it gets. You know, like they were, you know, huge and. Saying, you know, Alice in Chains too, and all those guys. You know, there's
like
a lot.
Soundgarden, all like the grunge era and the rock era.
Yeah, but we it seems like
that was like our last gasp of rock stardom there.
But I think the only like thing close is like Foo Fighters. Like I think they're the last
strand of, you know, rock, big rock bands left in the music industry right now. Like the rest of
maybe Nine Inch Nails.
I mean, I don't know. Like, they're not even hardly still. I mean, they still play a little bit, but
yeah, that's true. I guess still going. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking like of the people that are still putting out albums and
consistently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, like Alice in Chains still plays. They still sell shows. But I mean, they're not obviously after Lane passed. Like they're not. They've never been with us quite the same. Even though that William Duvall is singing for him now, he's an incredible man.
Yeah, he is.
He's really good. But yeah, so you're pretty heavily influenced by that 90s rock stuff.
Yeah,
that scene, right?
Yeah, I like that kind of shit. You know? I like, because I mean that's what I like learned off of, and you know everything else. And I learned a lot off of like when I would play guitar and just sit around doing nothing and just play like Metallica or Black Sabbath, or you know, I would learn how to play guitar with like Guns N' Roses, Metallica, and Black Sabbath. I had those three albums, and that was it. You know, for like ever. And I would just play those, or turn the radio on and just play whatever came on the radio and try to learn it by ear and everything. And because I mean, at that time, I didn't have a computer where I could just like go on the internet and find tabs and watch videos on how to play a song. So I just had to listen to it like 50 times until
or you actually had to buy guitar magazines and actually look through them to find tabs and,
or,
and stuff.
Or get your tape, and hit record when the song came on.
Yeah, I used to do that too. Yeah.
Make your own mixtapes. Mm-hmm.
Now, tapes, people, for those that don't know, were those little plastic squares with little ribbon inside. And you actually had to work at recording.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just have to sit and listen to the radio, wait for that one song that you want to learn to come on, and it comes on, be ready to hit record.
Oh, man.
And hope that you actually were around the tape back far enough so you had enough tape to record it.
Yeah. That's good.
Those were the
days. Oh, the struggles.
The struggles.
The struggle was real back then.
Yeah, I learned off those four or three bands a lot. And then when I started singing and playing, that's when I got into the alternative grungy stuff more, you know, because it's just, you know, it's what I liked doing, you know, just felt better than doing the other stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Has it only been guitar for you, or did you play anything else, or...?
I mean, I can, you know, like guitar wise, like I could pick up a bass and play it, you know, but it's just guitar. But like I said, my dad played piano. He gave me some lessons for a while, but I can dabble, but I can't, you know, play piano, you know, technically, because piano's, like, I think, the hardest thing in the world to play.
It's,
I can take some shit from my guitar and, like, find the chords on the piano and, like, do it that way, and, you know, that's about it. I mean,
my dad, we had a good piano in the house for the longest time. I don't think it'd ever been tuned, like, at least for a long time. But I think my dad got it from his brother or something, my uncle Roger. But anyway, I remember, like, with dad would walk past it, and then he would just go, and, like, you know, it was like cueing that old time rock and roll.
Yeah. That's good.
Just take the old record off the shelf. Another Seeker reference for you.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Big fan of Seeker, right?
Oh, I love Seeker.
I need some Seeker, too.
I've seen him live twice, I guess. I mean, the guy still got it. Like, I mean, I know he had throat surgery and stuff a while back, and took him a while to, like, recover and get back in it, but he still sounds as good as ever last time I saw him. And he's one of those guys, like, it's just crazy how many, you know, like, when you go to a show like that, and then you're like, you forget, you're like just going through the hits, and it's just like, man, I forgot about this one. It's like, you know, just got a massive catalog of hits that he has.
Mm-hmm. John Fogerty's another one of those guys that's like, I didn't realize there was this many good songs that he had.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there. Let's see. I'm trying to think. I think Fogerty, I don't know, he might be coming around or something.
Yeah, like Fogerty's coming.
Yeah.
To the Fox, I think.
Yeah.
So, are you like a? Do you have like rituals when you write? Like, some people write in the same notebook or same type of notebook. Some people have the same way of writing songs, no matter what. Even if it's just pieces of lyrics, or, you know, I know a friend of mine, when he writes, I mean, he's got little pieces of paper that and stuffed in notebooks.
Yeah.
Flips it open, he's like, I'm looking for it, and he's thumbing through like cocktail napkins and all kinds of crap to find lyrics. And
Yeah, kind of. It's kind of. I mean, I'm no really reason or rhyme or, you know, about it. I kind of just, if I feel like writing, you know, I'll just get whatever page is next to me and just try to write whatever thoughts I have down, and then kind of read it and come back to it. And
yeah.
Like when I write, I'll have a thought and I'll write whatever I'm writing because of that thought, and then I won't be able to finish it. You know, I'll just get stuck, and then I'll come back later or something and like have another thought, start writing something, and remember that I had some shit written down from before, go back to it, and then kind of make, you know, find out that relates to this and kind of put it all together. But yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. I probably have just piles of notebooks and just shreds of paper all over the place, you know, and just find them and just jot something down and throw it somewhere and then find it later and be like, oh shit, that's good, let's do something with that, you know.
Yeah, who wrote this?
But yeah, it's pretty much just kind of spontaneously random, you know. Because like when I actually sit down and actually force myself to try to write a song, I can never do it. You know, mm-hmm. I have to actually be in the mood for it, you know, just out of nowhere, just want to just have some thoughts and write them down, and then turn those thoughts into like lyrics, and then try to put those lyrics into a format. And
that's one of the things I never understood. Like people, you know, like actually people that are hired as songwriters as mm-hmm. a career, are like how they're able to, like, you know, people, record labels be like, okay, we need, you know, song by the end of the day or however, yeah. You know, it's like, okay, you know, it's like, how do you,
and they just go in another room and then 10 minutes later you've got a number one hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally envious of people like that, that can just think and write on their feet, not even just musically, like movies, I mean, you name it, like, or just like sports writers, like how they can just turn a single thought into this masterpiece in like an hour.
Yeah, I was listening to a Stern show this week, and he had James Taylor on,
mm-hmm.
and they talked for like 2 hours. He played like 9 songs on there, and it was incredible. But some of the stories, like him, like talking about being being like, I don't know. I think he said he signed with Apple. Like he said, he met the Beatles, and they introduced like some of his songs to them, and like they wanted to sign him, and he had to have his dad sign the deal because he wasn't of age yet.
Oh, yeah.
Like he was 17 or something still, and like, and
that's
then like
funny.
Yeah, just, and then so now he, and then like I think he actually signed with Apple for his first real album, mm-hmm. and things like at 8, like 3 days after his birthday, and all. So anyway, but it was just crazy to think like how young he is, and he's writing all these songs, and those songs like now,
oh yeah,
or you know, considered, you know, some of the best and
legendary.
And, yeah, it's like, but just to think about all those hits that he wrote too, and just it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty fun with number one hits too. Like a lot of singles off band CDs or the songs that were written the quickest.
Oh
know?
Yeah,
that's the funny part. Like
or the most
when people
simple.
Put the most time into a song and the most thought and emotion into a song, that's the song that usually doesn't become
sure.
the one that's, you know, is that's gonna be the number one hit. Like Paranoid by Black Sabbath wasn't even supposed to be on the album. They just needed a filler time, you know. They needed to fill like 3 minutes or something on their album, so they wrote that song in like 3 hours, and then, you know, they named the freaking CD after it, you know. You know, it was pretty funny. And then that was one of their hits. That and Iron Man were the two main hits off that off that CD. It's pretty funny when you think of it.
Well, we had that discussion with Matthias about how, you know, it's all about singles now. It's
mm-hmm.
like you watch how much effort they put into one song,
mm-hmm.
and then that's not even what people even listen to. It's the quick 3 minute song
mm-hmm.
that they wrote, you know.
Right.
And it's like, that just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's all about that hook.
I like Breaking Benjamin a lot.
What the hook?
And that's why I like Breaking Benjamin a lot. When I heard that, I don't remember which CD it was. Phobia maybe, with Diary Jane and Until the End and all those songs on it. You know, I heard So Cold and like Diary Jane, and I was like it. And I listened to the CD, and I liked the entire CD from front to end. You know,
yeah.
And that's why it just surprised me, because that never happens. You know,
they don't have too many bad songs.
Yeah,
Ben's a great writer himself, and I'm excited. Speaking of. There'll be a point fest next weekend. It's gonna be good.
I didn't get my tickets in time. Pissed.
Yeah.
I always seem to figure out that shit at the last minute. It's like, oh, that's coming. I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
I meant to get them. I just kept forgetting them.
I think. I mean, obviously, St. Louis loves Breaking Benjamin, so
oh, yeah.
they
They haven't been in a while. I mean, they broke up for a while. But
sure. Yeah, they... but yeah, I'm excited about it, and I think that's why a lot of people are sold out as fast as they did, because of them headlining.
Well, it's almost like they reproduced, you know, Point Fest from like 10 years ago.
With yeah.
Seether and Breaking Benjamin and all them that were all together in that era.
Yeah.
Only thing they're missing was Shinedown at that point, and then they'd be like, oh, shit. Try to be quiet exit, and it didn't work. But I think it's going to be a good show. I mean, they added some pretty decent artists like Greek Fire and
Shaman's Harvest.
I didn't really see the full
Seether. Yeah, Seether's playing.
Seether's playing.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it's that's what Jimmy was.
I was literally just saying, I was like, dude, he reminds me, you of course, Cortland, reminds me so much of Sean. It's crazy. Like, yeah, seriously, if you were to play one of your songs on your YouTube channel and close your eyes, if you didn't know who it was, I thought it was Seether at first. I'm like, that's not, I don't recognize that song. He goes, I'm like, okay, I know who that is now. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's sweet. Yeah, I like Seether a lot too.
Yeah.
His, that, I forgot the hell what that CD was, the first CD that I liked that they had.
Was it Disclaimer?
Yes. Yeah, I liked that a lot.
Oh, yeah, they did what, Disclaimer 1 and 2? Like, it was like the second edition or deluxe edition or kind of thing. When, and that's when.
Yeah, that's the one. I think it's the one I had.
Well, the Broken came out on there. Mm-hmm. Like, they had the. His version.
I like the original version without Amy Lee.
And then they added Amy, and it became a huge hit. Yeah.
And they don't overcomplicate shit, you know, that's why I liked him, because, I mean, he'd keep it simple, but it was just still so good, you know.
Yeah, I saw him at Pops one night. It was, they called it a triple threat tour. It was Seether, Sick Puppies, and King, and they were all three-piece bands, so I thought that was interesting that, but hey, that was a killer show, man. That was probably like the, I guess that was one of the like the last Sick Puppy shows, because they are pretty close to the end there, because they kicked Shim out of the band after that a little later.
Yeah,
I guess he apparently he's a handful. He was a mess. But anyway, you want to play another one?
Yeah, this one I'm still kind of working on. Brought it to Exit a couple times, you know, practice. We jammed it and never finished it. We just kind of brought it in as an idea one day. And but we got, you know, made some progress. And I kind of finished it on the acoustic myself. But like I said, there's a lot of work to do. I don't know what I'm going to name it yet either, so maybe I can figure something out. But
we'll come up with something.
Oh,
into your spine. It twists, splits, and glides from behind. It creeps up to palms the knife.
Real nice, Clark.
Real nice. Shitter's full.
I love when you can use the guitar for more than just the strings, when you can actually use a percussion too.
Yeah, stuff. Little tappies on there.
Yeah, that's I watched these guys the other night. My buddies, Jeff Nation, that's been on the show, has been his various hands, but yeah, he plays an acoustic duo. And called the Town Drunks is his little cover band, and they would do a lot of that stuff, and it's just fun that,
yeah,
especially in that kind of element where two guitars and things where you can add so much more sound to the to it like that.
Yeah, I like Sublime a lot. They're like, yeah, like obsessed with Sublime, always have been. Oddly, I don't play Sublime style music, but I love them. And like on his acoustic album, he used to do that shit all the time, just the slightest little taps, you know. Yeah. But it made such an impact on me, you know, because I was young, like that's when I first started singing and playing, so I would hear it, and it would just, you know, this was really stuck out to me. I loved it, you know, so I like to incorporate it here and there.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy, write some songs down.
Yeah, so.
What do you got? Potential song titles, here we go.
Given to Sorrow was one.
Good one.
Right on Time, and then just Give In. That was good. I like that song.
For what the line that was like sticking to me was Dancing Shadow, but then I was like, I don't know, because you also wrote White Shadow, so
yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
I don't know if you want to name that close.
Right on Time sounds, I mean, that's pretty good, because that's kind of like the main hook on it, I think, is the Right on Time part.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, it was like either Right on Time or like Get In or something like that.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it'll work.
It's a good one. I like that one a lot.
It could be Give In and then in parentheses, Right on Time.
Yeah, true.
One of those. But yeah, man, that sounded real good.
Yeah, I've been working on that one for just randomly a couple days. I started playing it again like 4 or 5 days ago and then just kind of went with it, you know, and just wanted to finish it. So
in my head, I just hear some nasty drums. Just
me too, man. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
That's all the drums in my head, like that whole song.
I just when you did that, I just went to thinking of In the Air Tonight, the Phil Collins.
I can feel it. I just, well, when I hear that song now, I think of Mike Tyson doing it in the hotel room in Vegas.
I always think about
it's my favorite part. It's my favorite part.
Yeah,
the bald guy from either Harold and Kumar or Hopped Up Time Machine. I forget what his name is, but he always air drums.
Oh, yeah.
Every movie he's in, he air drums.
Rob Corddry.
It was hilarious every time.
Yeah.
Was that in the hot tub when he's like, you know, he's always got that patch on the front. He said he's growing the bangs out.
Yeah. You know, yeah. That's good.
I just like how he's what do you call it? The Motley Lou was his name, and that he, when he went back, he changed Motley Crue to Motley Lou.
Oh yeah.
And then he was Lugal instead of Google. That was awesome.
Anyway, you guys watched the second one yet?
I haven't.
I can't bring myself to do it.
No, I haven't seen it. No.
Yeah, I haven't watched it either.
It doesn't have a what's his face in it either. Does it? Like Cusack.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it was funny. It was like the main character, wasn't he, in the first one?
Yeah.
They just come out the second one. They're like, yeah, you were the least funny one, so we're going to take you out.
We're going to go ahead and get rid of you.
I think everybody else has in that movie's done all kinds of other shit because of that movie, and
right.
John Cusack just kind of fell away. Go make another 2012.
Yeah. Right. I was literally about to say, he's one of the shittiest actors on the planet. Why the fuck people
good,
think he's good?
1408 was good.
Yeah, that's like one. That. I'll give you one.
Right, okay, I'll take one.
What else? So I mentioned White Shadow, and you've mentioned Plane and Exit. But how'd that all come about? Because I remember. I've been following those guys for a long time now, and then all of a sudden you show up in the band, and that's when we started talking and get to meet you.
What happened was, it's a funny story actually. I was living in Grafton for a while, but I moved back into St. Charles. I don't even know how long ago it was. My time tables are ridiculous, but it was right before that first CD release party. You know, it was about remember the Voodoo show at Harrah's? Did you go to that? The Halloween Voodoo show?
Yeah.
That was my first show.
Oh, yeah.
So it was sometime around there is when I started.
Right.
But
rest in peace.
Yeah,
and Fro played with us.
That
dude's fucking love that guy.
He's insane.
That the wandering madman.
Yeah,
that show was pretty awesome.
He's a psychopath.
That was the Halloween party, right?
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah, that was cool.
I think I dressed.
I'll be mailing you a bag. Don't worry.
No.
I think I dressed as Slash to that Halloween party. So I
totally see that too.
Yeah, I got this like big kind of like Jerry curl wig going on, like, you know, Slash.
Some Soul Glow going on.
Yeah.
And I wore, I think,
Leather pants?
Just a t-shirt. And some big, like, aviator glasses.
I would have went with the big hair and just leather pants.
Yeah. That's all you need.
That's when I had my hair grown out, I just let it grow because I get a pretty big fro. I let it grow out. So I just had that, and I tied a camouflage, like, freaking bandana on my head and just said I was a rainbow the whole time. So. Kept it simple, you know.
Yeah.
But
and then after a few drinks, you kind of sound like Sylvester Stallone too.
I was moved back here and got an apartment out in St. Charles, and my friend Mike Booker, I've known for a long time. He's known my sister that grew up, and I've known him since I was pretty, you know, young. And Xbox Live, we would play Call of Duty and stuff, you know, and like he invited me, then introduced me to Colin, you know, and we'd play Call of Duty and stuff, and then said they were kind of looking for a guitar player, so then me and Mike would play Call of Duty and kind of talk about it, you know, like while we're playing my Xbox.
Shit talking.
Hilarious, yeah. And then I just, you know, they invited me over to their practice one time, and I went there, and they had a guitar for me, because I have shitty ass electric, because I never, you know, play electric, so let me use his, and played, and then they said they got a show coming up in like a week and a half, so I went home and just played the album like over and over and over and over again, and tried to learn all the songs best I could, and then played the show at Voodoo, you know.
Yeah.
And I never played with like click tracks, because they had it all timed out to a video and click tracks and loops and everything, and never done that before, so it was a pretty big ordeal that first show. I was, you know, pretty nervous about it, because like I don't know what I'm doing.
And then you're adding, you know, being about 20 feet up in the air.
Yeah.
The possibility of falling off and busting your face at the bar.
And only knowing the songs for about a week.
Right.
It kind of knowing the songs for a week.
So no pressure whatsoever.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah. It was pretty fun, though. I mean, we played pretty well.
Yeah. I remember I sent, around that time also, I sent Colin a text. I guess it was probably a little while before, but sent him a text and I said, hey man, come see my friends Hollow Point Heroes at Voodoo Lounge. And I think he thought it was a different Shane. I don't know if he had my number saved as Anyway, he shows up though, and I'm like, "Hey, man." He goes, and he goes, "Oh, you know, he like thought it was somebody, a different guy, and all this stuff." Anyway, but he actually showed up to the show. We went to watch him, and like, so that was the first time I introduced him to Hollow Point Heroes, and you know, and he loved it, and it's fun that like after that, like, you know, they've started playing shows a lot together, and it's cool to see, like, especially you know, two bands from St. Charles County kind of sticking together and making some noise together and stuff. But yeah, that was funny though. Like, and then they end up on the same bill together a lot of times.
It was definitely a new breed for me, you know, because like the band that I had like back when, you know, was more of like me doing everything and, you know, writing riffs and doing it more alternative-y, you know, and Edge is more, I wouldn't say like heavy, you know, but you know what I mean, there's definitely a difference, you know. And
well, that's one thing I do love about Exit is that there's very kind of a eclectic sound, like it's there's a lot of different influences, like especially like, I mean, if you listen to Junk Deals and Bear Dog, I mean, they're very different albums, but there's a lot of, you know, there's heavier stuff, there's softer, little softer things, there's the some, you know, more you know, even
like Marianne-y stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just fun to hear a lot of different sounds and not just the same, you know, headbanging the whole time.
Yeah, that's why I liked it. That's why, because you know, they just said, you know, if you dig it, you know, come jam with us. And I listened to it, and you know, I definitely like a couple of them. Like Backwards J caught my ear like pretty good, and Innocence and Hide and Seek. All right. Those three songs really stuck in my head.
Every show, I did, like, always, you know, they'll say something on Facebook, like, you know, what do you guys want to hear at the show? And
flat everybody puts Backwards J.
Backwards J and Marianne. Just play, like, yeah. But that's, like, the whole set. Like,
just play those two 10-minute songs.
Yeah. I love that. Especially, if anybody doesn't know, that you did this, like, guitar solo on Marianne. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was weird how that came about. Upson kind of had this riff, you know, the background riff for Marianne, you know, that's not the soloing, just like that background, like melodic little plucking thing, and then I just kind of like started soloing around with it and playing with it, and then we kind of decided to maybe write like a little solo behind it, because at practice, you know, your practice, you just play the riff and we just sit there and jam, you know, so I'm jamming and do it for a while, and we thought it sounded pretty cool, and then came up with some cool ideas, and me and Mike kind of wrote a big part of it together, you know. He played guitar, you know, me and him would sit in his basement and we'd just kind of mess around with it and like write on his little dry erase board, you know, and writing stuff, erasing it, rewriting stuff, putting it together, and then the hard solo part, you know, was, I just kind of winged it, you know, and kind of turned out pretty good. But yeah, that was cool. It's still weird thinking about like how we wrote that, because it's just so long and ridiculous, you know.
Well, it's almost like two different songs, because the first half is, it's an instrumental and then that solo, but then like the second half just kicks in and like punches you right in the face and gets real heavy and so it's I don't know, but yeah, I love that stuff though. It's like kind of this like 70s kind of classic rock feel to the
groove.
And
that was the one I was most excited to record too, you know, we all were to record that and hear it and everything, and Rich Crybomb, you know, recorded, he did a really good job.
I love that dude.
Yeah, we were I've interviewed Jack from Brookroll, and they recorded out their trailer and was talking about how good that guy is at what he does.
He's like a fucking magician.
Yeah. He is,
like, he really is. Like, you will literally sit there with him and he will be like, we'll try this, and then he will like, let me see it for a second, and he'll be like, dude, he'll play this fucking riff, I'm like, where did you come up with that? Or he'll come up with like some crazy harmony, or it's insane to watch him work, because he's behind the board just banging away, and he goes, okay, stop, all right, do it again. Yeah. And then you go right back into it again. So yeah, he's a trip to watch in the studio.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, he definitely threw out a like couple key parts on certain stuff, certain songs and stuff. You know, like certain verses or something. Like I remember in You're On the Way Out, there we did the verses, and on the second verse kind of drops down just instead of doing the same, you know, but there's just a little part, there's a slight subtle just, you know, barely difference, but it made all the difference. You know, sure. He's just like, you know, if you threw this in there, just barely change this to this, then it would really make things more, I don't know, colorful.
Yeah. I love that, like, being a super fan like myself, I love hearing, like, the demos and stuff, like, I have the four-track rough demos that Exit put out, like, just basement recordings or whatever they had, and then, so I have that on a CD, and then they went into the studio, and they put out Junk Deals with Rich, and then to hear, like, what songs became in the studio, it's like it's really a lot of fun to compare and contrast to how like how a song takes on a life of its own in the studio and becomes something totally different. But yeah, that's it's always fun to hear like the different alternative takes and stuff like that.
And it's also just bringing another person in from the outside that hears something different than what you were thinking.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's exactly where you were trying to go with it. It's like that's the missing piece you need.
Yeah, because you get stuck. I mean, some, you know, if you play the same song in practice, you know, over and over and over again, trying to think of stuff, and you play it 500 times, you know, and then you're kind of just your mind is just stuck hearing that same thing, and you can't really force anything else in there. So
yeah,
outsider points of view are definitely important.
Sure. So Bear Dog, you guys, that's been out for a while. So yeah, pick that up if you haven't got a copy. It's a great record. I really dig it. Is that your was that your first time actually recording on an album, or did you
first time on like a legitimate, you know, like studio situation? You know, like I said, I always do like Tascam crap, or you know, recording myself on video, or play it back and that kind of stuff. I made a little demo. I mean, we went to when I was younger, you know, my old band. We came out with like a little 5-song demo, but we went in like some dude's basement who had like a like kind of half-ass recording studio, you know. Like, I mean, it was set up legit. Like, you had good equipment and everything, but it's like a little wooden box sound booth, and you know, it was fun and it sounded decent, but yeah, it wasn't really. I think it was like $1,000 for like 6 songs or something, or like $500 or something.
You guys ever watch that Old Brother Art though?
Yes,
I'd pay you $500. Same dude can.
Same dude can.
That's what I started thinking of.
That's good. Yeah. I gotta grab a beer real quick.
Yeah, beer run. BEERUN.
So yeah.
So now that he's away, we can talk shit about him the whole thing. What'd you really think of that song?
That was good. I can't even bullshit around anything. That was really good.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you know, when you hear songs like that, I kind of want to break some shit. You know,
just want to get behind the drum kit and
just stomp on some shit, you know. But no, those are the kind of songs that are really cool to hear just acoustically, because you know when you write something like that and then you play it with for somebody else, like the drummer or the whoever, and they're like, "Oh, I hear this," and then he just starts beating shit out of the drum kit, and it's like, that's exactly what I was going for. that's a good one. That's the type of song like he was saying, you write when you're angry, and then you play it at a show and people are literally trying to kill each other.
Which song are we talking about?
The one you just played.
Oh, yeah, I like that one. That one's got a lot of stuff.
A lot of drops and
It's came from a lot of different places too. Writing it, you know, a lot of. Like, I had a buddy who recently passed away from heroin, and that was a big inspiration to write that song, you know, most of it, at least.
I got my buddy Zach Michael, who's going to be at the birthday party. He's been living in Nashville, singer-songwriter stuff, and he's got a friend, I don't know if he might even be the same guy, Mitch. Mm-hmm. Is that it? Mm-hmm. No. Anyway, this guy, a good friend of his, they used to play music together and things. But Mitch passed from heroin, and Zach wrote a song called "Carry On," and it's all the money's going to support the foundation and all this, like, there's a big movement trying to for mm-hmm. the, all this. So
yeah, it's definitely a big, you know, it's a important to me, like, you know, that addiction and stuff like that, you know. Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's
I struggle with it pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, going back to mentioning James Taylor on there, he talked about his struggle with addiction, even like that he that he's like, he knew John Lennon, and they talked about them doing heroin together and things, and like, it's just
what's crazy is when you look at James Taylor, you don't see him like
yeah.
that. I see him like the back home country guy sitting right. in a rocking chair writing some shit. Yeah. He's like, nah, man, I was back in back room in a corner and all fucked up. It's like, I don't see James Taylor like that.
Well, he was, this was the storyline that he was telling, like, all that stuff was when he was like 17, 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And so he's pretty, I mean, obviously, you know, he cleaned up and he's the image that you see now, but mm-hmm. it's like, but yeah, imagine, he must have had some demons when he was younger.
Oh yeah.
Well, somebody was, either I read it somewhere or somebody's telling me that song, I See Fire, I See Rain, was about, he actually had to have, one of his friends had passed and he didn't deal with it very well and they gave him electric shock therapy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what that song's about.
Especially back like, in that day.
Dude. I would have never thought that's what that song was about.
Yeah, you can imagine how terrible that was back then.
Yeah, no kidding.
Fucking just like literally just getting electrocuted.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they said it works, so we'll try it.
Yeah. It's like a lobotomy.
You want to play another?
Yeah, I can. I got Beginning of the End is a song that I have, and I took it to Exit a couple times, and we worked with it, and that we kind of turned it into like a pretty heavy version, and then I try to been trying to rewrite it back to like a different version, and I kind of like have take pieces out and put pieces in, and you know, so might be a little rough. I mean, still kind of working on it, but we'll see how it goes.
Thank you.
the blade. The memories will fade. Remember why you brought the pencil to the page. Never surrender and give in to the fraudulent fate. Either you bend or you crack enough to break. It's the beginning.
Is that what the build on there? I don't know. I know I've heard of the term bridge and all that, but like I like the way in the part where he just like starts building back up to the.
That's the part where you see the pit starting to form.
Yeah,
that's the swirl of the storm right there. When somebody gets their teeth knocked out.
Hey, when that happens,
it's good times. Mm-hmm.
Kind of want to redo that if we could.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I don't have to, but I stumbled in the choruses a lot. But we can keep it.
I thought it sounded great.
Yeah, yeah,
we'll keep it.
You can.
We'll keep her.
You can do a take two.
Yeah, we pretty much wrote that. Tried to rewrite that chorus like today and yesterday because I had a different idea for it, but it was too similar to that right on time chorusy kind of riff thing. So mm-hmm. I had to rewrite it and put it all together, so it's all still kind of jumbled up there, but it'll come together eventually.
Yeah. Work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
One other, you mentioned GNR earlier and things I was going to talk about, how cool it was for you to get to share the stage with Slash.
Oh, yeah, that was freaking ridiculous. Yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah, because like I said, I learned how to play, learned off like his guitar playing and shit, you know, and being able to go there and play on the same stage that he was playing on, like in front of all of his amps and shit, and watch him sound check and just, you know, stand there. It was pretty fucking awesome. It was like a kind of unbelievable kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, that, especially, you know, like you say, you know, growing up looking up to this guy, and then all of a sudden there he is, like, you know, and did it live up to the,
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I mean, we didn't really like meet and greet and any of that kind of stuff, you know. But in passing, like backstage in the hallway, you know, I said what's up, stuff, and I shook his hand and everything. But you know, it was awesome. Sure. Yeah, it was definitely a good feeling.
I met him outside the pageant. Saw him and Miles and the conspirators there, and he actually stuck around outside and did a signing and stuff. There's a huge line, and he said he'd sign everybody's stuff, but never, you know, he didn't want any pictures and things, but just because there were so many people, he wanted to speed the line up. But so it was cool, man. I got CD. I bought the CD and I got it autographed by Slash, and it's pretty neat to see a rock star in the flesh like that, the close up and everything, and hang out with them. And
then, you know, it's always nice when they're super cool about shit. Yeah. It's like, you know, you have this idea of meeting somebody, and then it's not, either it goes exactly how you wanted it to, or it's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
I remember, not to cut you off, but when we were after the show when they were playing, he always throws his picks out, you know, and I watched him at the pageant before we went there, you know, because I wanted to watch him play and everything, and figure out like what we were going to play with and everything, and then we went and watched him after we got done playing. We watched him, and he was throwing all the picks out and the confetti and all that shit, and I could not find a pick, and then you found one and you gave me the one that you found.
Yeah,
I still have that pick.
That was
I got that thing hidden.
It hit me like right in the chest and fell on the ground, and then I stomped on it before anybody else could, like,
that was awesome, because I really wanted that fucking pick. I could not fucking get one. He threw like 10 of them out there.
Yeah, well, I figure, you know, what am I gonna do with a pick?
Yeah.
So I
stare at it.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, I knew it obviously would mean a lot more to you than me, you know, for in my collection. Being that you play guitar and Slash is one of your
idols and things of sorts.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was an incredible night. What's the other band's name?
What the hell were they? They were fucking weird as hell.
Oh, well, they're great though. Now that the mic's on,
that song by that
their
guy.
Album was called Church of Rock and Roll. And they had a song called "Well, that's the biggest black ass I've ever seen. I like it.
Oh, goddamn! I have
no idea.
They were fucking weird though, man. They were cool though. I mean, they had a whole show,
is it Steel Panther?
But yeah, the lead singer would be up there just moving around, being like all crazy, fucking.
I'm going to Google. Hold on a second.
Yeah, he did some weird shit.
Hold on, callers. Call in with the hits.
What is their name? I don't know.
Are they like a more recent band? Or?
Yeah, they're fairly recent new. Dish. But they... Foxy Shazam. There it is.
Yeah, I would have never guessed that.
I've seen them at Point Fest also. And they're one of the craziest live shows. Like, one of the favorite parts of the show is and he did it a lot there.
What was her name?
Foxy Shazam.
Yeah, that's it. Foxy Shazam.
But anyway,
I've never heard of them ever.
On stage, did you catch that part where he eats the pack of cigarettes?
No, I didn't see that. I wish I would have seen
it. He did it both times I've seen him live. But he says, and he's got this real high voice, and he's like, he goes, I need a cigarette. Somebody give me a cigarette. And so everybody just starts slinging cigarettes on the stage. And then he picks them all up, and he's got a handful. and he sticks them all in his mouth and starts lighting them. And then he's smoking them like that, and then he go
like Conehead style.
Yeah, and then he takes them and by the filter and eats them lit and starts shoving them in his mouth and eats this entire pack of cigarettes, and it's obviously he's done it several times, and it's gonna
hurt you.
I don't know how. I mean, he must go puke them up off stage or something.
That would be sick.
It's like he eats in a pack of lit cigarettes, and I don't get it. It's the craziest thing.
I don't even know how to react to that.
Yeah, that's it. And
that's the weird.
I didn't watch too much of them because we were backstage getting ready and shit. And, but I watched a lot of their videos before we went there, to see what they were like, and them. And they do some shit.
They're kind of a lot of the music reminds me of a Queen.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah,
or The Darkness.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of that. That guy's voice, he definitely sounds a lot like Freddie. Mm-hmm. And they have that kind of classic rock.
The mannerisms and stuff. Sure. He's kind of,
flamboyant.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them that are really good on that album, though. They have a second album out that it kind of fell flat for me. But the Church of Rock and Roll album was really good stuff. But it was fun. They were hanging out. I know they were, hustling to try to make it, but they... One of the guys was outside that arena that night in Springfield and handing out CDs trying $5 a piece or whatever. And just trying to get some gas money, I guess, to the next town.
That was a fun time.
Yeah,
that was a good trip.
Yeah, that was worth the drive. That was a pretty incredible night.
And we shot that whole video for the Guitar Center thing. And all that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
all that shit, though. I didn't know. He was on his computer for weeks freaking editing that. We had so much footage.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. About time we get back down to Springfield, give the fans another show down there.
We were going to do that Head PE Alien Ant Farm show, and then Upson's dumbass fucking broke his fucking knee or whatever. Which I think is healed now. I think he's almost healed. That's good.
He's getting back there.
He's not going to look any prettier. Terrible looking son of a bitch. You hear me, Upson? You look terrible.
Shots fired.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man, we'll wrap this up. So keep an eye out for maybe some solo shows.
Yeah.
Maybe some exit shows coming up this summer. Till then, go pick up a copy of Bear Dog. Crank it up. Mm-hmm. You can find it on CD Baby and iTunes and wherever.
I think we're on like Pandora and shit now too.
Yeah.
Pandora and iHeartRadio and all that crap type of thing.
Right. So, yeah, that's a monster, man, being on Pandora. Like, that's you get looped in with all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys get messages on there every now and then from mm-hmm. somebody from somewhere around the world saying, "Hey, just found this." And, mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll be trying to get some shows coming up here soon, some acoustic gigs and everything else. I'm gonna in the process of finishing some of these songs, and I'm gonna try to get a little 3-song demo thing out there, you know, because yeah. I mean, you've talked about a bunch, you know. I'm gonna get yeah. out there. And I got some, you know, people and friends and stuff that can do that. They got some, you know, recording stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's
I'm not gonna go get all extravagant and spend a bunch of money on it, you know, record some shit.
That's what's great about modern technology, man, is like, I know I've talked about it before too, but like, Phil or Moon,
I still don't get that.
They wrote
Phil.
Yeah, it's a real name. Well, they wrote this long post about Story of the Year and things on the page, and how, you know, like what the amount of money and the millions of dollars they would spend recording an album when they were getting going and stuff, and then what they, you know, for what it costs for them to put out an album now, like mm-hmm. how they can record it for much, much less money and still sound really good. You know, it's crazy to think of like of what people used to spend to make those albums and things, the record yeah. companies and stuff. And
oh, it's like at Trailer Studios, man. Like what you would spend at a Sony, you know, those big ass studios, you could go there and get better quality, more time spent, and just get, you know, a whole better experience than you would having a gatekeeper over telling you what you're supposed to be doing instead right. of doing what you want to do.
Sure.
So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, hopefully get that this year and have some.
Yeah, I'm planning on it.
Yeah, man.
I got these 3 songs I'm gonna put on there. So.
Well, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Hell yeah!
All right, well that's it. Episode 68. That's a wrap.
Booyah!
Wrap. Thanks for hanging out, guys.
Peace.